Okay, Perek Dalet Pasukei Vayomer Boaz Biyom Kinois Chasodem Miyad Nami. Boaz says on the day. On the day that you acquire the field from Naomi, you will also have acquired here, and we really did this on Friday, it's when we review, we just touched upon it. On the day that you acquire the field from Naomi, we ignore the yud, even though it's spelled in the pasuk konisi, I have acquired. We read it as if it says konisa, you have acquired. So that the pasuk that means that not only will you acquire the property, not only will you acquire the property of Rus HaMovia, you also will acquire her. To establish her mace al nachalasa. So here, oh my gosh, what happened to you?
I'm a doctor.
All right.
You never know what you're going to get.
It's a new Hasidus? It's a new Hasidus? A new Hasidus? You're wearing a jail outfit. What's underneath the yellow? You escaped from somewhere. Look, he's wearing a jail outfit.
Wait, prison.
Morning.
Good morning. Okay, look, let's go. Let's recall this review. Over here, he tells you that on the day that you have acquired the field from the Ami, you've also acquired the field from Rus. Let's see over here. Rashi says, "Hey, we did this on Friday." Here Rashi has a very interesting chiddush. I'm not sure where this comes from. That Rashi learned Shan the Pasil as a condition. Rus Hamoavia has stipulated the only one that can buy her field is the one that marries her. It's a package deal. And if you're not willing to fulfill the tanai, you cannot acquire her property. This is what the condition is. And this is what Boaz has now revealed for the first time to Toiv, the Goyal, the closest relative, the uncle, his uncle, the brother of Elimelech. Let's take a look at the Targum and Pasuk Hey. Va'amar Boaz. Boaz says, Biyoim Zivanusoch, when you will purchase Yos Chakla, the field, Min Yidod in Ami, from the hand, the possession of Nami, Umin Yidod in Us Moavisa, Itas Misa, the wife of the dead. Now that is the Eishes Hames Chayov at the Mifrak. I'm sorry, I think it would be coming in the wrong place. So Min Yada Durus Moavia Itas Miso Chayov at the Mifrak. You are responsible also to redeem the wife of the dead man. Eishes Hames Koniso. He reads those three words together. That's not. I don't think that's really the way. Not maybe I'm not reading it correctly because the trap of the pasuk. Yeah.
Is that the halacha?
No, it's not the halacha. That's what Rashi is coming to. Rashi is coming.
Boaz is making all this up.
Boaz is making all this up, is he? Or
he's making all sorts of stipulations
in order that he can marry her.
Yeah.
That is a discussion. As we mentioned on Friday, that there are two mahalchim in the early mafarshim. Was Boaz trying to do that? Was he trying to discourage Toiv? By hook or by crook, no way, you're not going to do this. I don't want to dare let you do this, and therefore I'm going to do it. Or no, adarabo, you can read every single word. He's trying very hard to encourage him to do it. And
if,
he said...
Isn't that why he first goes on and on about the land? And
yeah.
And all of a sudden, it comes with baggage.
Exactly, right. So I don't know. So from Rashi, the simple understanding is he's trying to discourage him. He's creating problems that don't exist. He's mentioning him, she's a Moaviyah. Oh, you realize what you're getting yourself into? Maybe you should back off. Do you realize there's a condition? Who made up this condition? Boaz had a lot of influence over Ruth. So you can say to listen, just sell the field. You need Parnassah. I'm gonna set you up. I'll set you up for the rest of your life. I'll hire you as a relative. He's willing to pay top dollar. He'll buy your property. He'll go back to you when Yovel comes anyway. So in the meantime, you'll have what to live off for the next 50 years, whatever it is, until Yovel comes and you'll get back your property. Maybe things will turn around by that point in time. No, he's making it tonight. You want to buy her field, you also have to marry her. Where did this condition come from? I do not know. You're right.
Naomi have a role in any of this, being the owner?
Well, Naomi seemed to very much want this. Naomi, in the beginning of the pasuk, he encouraged her. It doesn't say it explicitly, but Mefarshim learned that she very much did want Ruth to marry Boaz. So, we don't find any dialogue, any conversation between Naomi and Boaz in the entire seif. That is a very interesting thing. Who are the main?
Naomi also entitled to evil?
Is in Naomi also? So in fact, some want to suggest, I saw this, I do not remember where I saw this, that Naomi wanted Boaz to be miyabim her. Maybe Boaz should marry her. The only problem though is that she's already passed her childbearing years.
But they died. Yeah, but he died.
Anyway, this is not a halachic ibum.
There is same age, well, age no.
They're right. They're more in the same generation.
Same
right.
He might be older.
Okay, so look, one of the major questions in the sefer: why is the sefer called Sefer Ruth? It should be called Sefer Naomi, because it is, after all about Naomi. Naomi was the one that it was her doing that Ruth converted. It was her influence that caused Ruth to convert. I don't know the answer to all these questions. I do not know, but in Hanami, it's correct. He's making here conditions. He's making here problems that seemingly don't exist. He mentions that she's Rus HaMoviyah. He mentions a condition. Rashi is a very mysterious Rashi. Where did Rashi get this from? That Rus has made a condition. The only one that can redeem the field is the redemption of the field is conditional upon marrying Rus. Where does this come from? I do not know. Rashi adds this in. Targum, let's see just the Targum. Targum says, Umin Yoda de Rus you are responsible to also to redeem the property from Rusamovia, and you are obligated to be miyabim her, lemispa means to marry her, to take her, lemispa means to take her, lemispa to take her as a wife, min beglal, so that you should establish the name Misov the dead Al Achsante on the real estate, on the property. Now, by the way, over here there are two. I'm going to come back to this a little bit later, but over here the Targum he is Marech. Why the repetition? Why the verbosity? To take her as a Yavama, to be to her as a wife. All it needs to say is take her as a Yavama. Yavama is a wife. Why the repetition? Take her as a Yavama. So and lemispol into and take her as a wife. So we're going to see soon a little bit more in the next pasuk. There are two different parts to Yavam. We know in halacha there's the Bia Rishayna, the first marital act, and then there is what follows. And according to some, we want to suggest that Yibum does not necessarily mean that you remain married to her forever as a wife. It can mean only with her for a very short period of time. We'll come to that a little bit later on, but that's an important thing to take a note of now when we come to that point. Okay, so I do not know. Again, you're right. The question is just bigger than there is. I don't have an answer, but it's a very interesting point. There is in the midst of Geula, the closest relative is supposed to redeem the property. And we discussed this last week. The reason why the Torah wants a closest relative to redeem the property is so that the property remains in at least the family, or at least in the Shevet. When Eretz Yisrael was divided among the Shvatim, there was a goal that certain regions of Eretz Yisrael belong to certain Shvatim. If people are going to start selling real estate all over Eretz Yisrael, it's going to become a big melting pot. And that's not the goal. The goal is we want every part of Eretz Yisrael to maintain its identity, its uniqueness, its unique flavor from that particular shevet. And to enhance that goal, the Torah said, the closest relative redeems property, so that in the event the person does not buy back the property before Yovel, before following all the rules of Gula, and the land remains permanently in the possession of the buyer, it should at least be in the possession of that family for a prolonged period of time. Yeah.
Question was raised about why the sefer is called Yud. I must have heard this somewhere. I couldn't make this up. But
let's hear it.
Maybe it's to compensate for the fact that there's a parsha called Bolo.
There's a parasha called Balak, which is a negative Moav. Moav. So Ruth is the
antidote.
Okay, that's a nice idea. Okay. Okay. Now there's another. Yeah.
What stuff? This whole conversation going on now is Gula for land. I would think that the uncle would be acceptable to all this. The point is, why doesn't he bring in the other Gula? Is the fact that you have to produce an heir who will be the Mashiach.
That's what it's alluded to. That's the deeper meaning. Land is just money. Money comes and goes. The deeper meaning is the redemption, the geul that will come to the world, or for Klal Yisrael that is being prepared. That's being prepared at this point in time. You're 100% correct. That's why all of this is described in terms of redemption. It's a physical redemption of the land, but the depth of this concept is it's alluding to the redemption, the spiritual redemption of Klal Yisrael and that matter of the entire world. So you're right. That's exactly what it says. Geula. A lot of mitzvos in Torah are described in mundane terms, but the mundane terms allude to the great spiritual sparks of holiness that are buried behind these examples. Now, there's another important point. Important, but almost all of us have the same idea. It says in the word konisa, eshes hames konisa lehakim shem hames al nachalaso. We read it konisa, but it's spelled konisi with a yud. Why? The answer is because Boaz was trying to hint. Ultimately, I know you're not going to do it. I am going to do it. Eshes hames konisi. I, Boaz, will take her for myself. Another tea leaf. He's trying to hint to her that, you know, he's trying to hint to Tov, you know what? Back off. Stand down. I'll take care of this. I don't want you to do it. Konisa. Oh, did I say konisa? I really meant to say konisi. You know what? Have a nice day. Let's. This is not for you. This is for me. You don't know what you're doing here. All right. So that will come to a little later on. Let's see the next pasuk. Vayomer haGoyel. The Goyel says, okay, now that you revealed to me this bad news, that in addition to buying the land of Naomi, I also have to buy the land of Rus. It's a package deal. And Rus has stipulated the only one that can buy her land is one who marries her. You know what? I'm not ready to marry her. Vayomer haGoyel lo uchal ligoli. I cannot continue to proceed to redeem this field for me. Pen ashris es nachalasi. By doing so, I may harm my inheritance. And therefore, you know what? Ga'alucha ato es kulasi. You know what? You should go ahead and redeem my what I'm entitled to. Ki, because lo ucha ligol, I am unable to redeem. Now, there are many issues. Number one is, if it's not good for you, why is it good for someone else? Bishlam, it's not good for me. I can't afford it. I don't have the skill set to deal with this transaction. I want to go buy a real estate. I don't know how to deal with tenants. I don't know how to deal with all the taxes and all the laws. I'm just not cut out for this. I just rather take a cash settlement right now and I'll be very, very happy. It's not for me. Okay, so if but you, this is what you do. You're a baki. You're a mumcha in all of these in yanim in real estate. So you take care of it. But here he says the reason why I can't do this is because it's suicide. it's a spiritual suicide. If I'm going to marry her, then my children are going to be tainted. I'm going to have children that are not going to be members of Klal Yisrael. Ashris es nachalasi. That's a pretty powerful translation. No matter how you learn, how you spin it, all the various mepharshim, whatever you're going to say, it's not a very nice, not a very pleasant thing to say. I'm going to destroy my inheritance, my children, my lineage. I'm going to ruin everything. So what do I need this for? But you, Boaz, you, the Gadol Hadar, you can do it. You should commit spiritual suicide.
Yeah, but Boaz lost all his children.
What? So just because he lost all the children doesn't mean that he should have now illegitimate children. And also, I don't think it was expected that Boaz, so that's what you want to say. You want to say that Boaz was too old to have children. Al pi derech hateva. He was too old, so if he was 80 years old, so that's an answer. It's not going to be a problem for you. For me, it's a problem. Because if I'm going to marry her, it's likely we're going to have children. I'm going to be married to her, she's going to have children. And we're going to have children, they're going to be problematic. But you, Boaz, you're an 80-year-old man. According to the Medrash, he was 400 years old. And whatever that means, I don't know. But he was obviously a very old man, and al pi derech hateva, you don't see 80-year-old men having children, so in echanam, that would be a very good answer.
Well, you don't have kids who are going to be upset that I'm marrying another woman.
Oh, so that's another answer. Another answer is, what's as nachalasi? Nachalasi refers to my other wife. I have another wife, and I have children, and the worst thing you can possibly do is bring another wife into the home. The Masechta Yevam, the second wife, is called the Tzara. Tzaros. Why are two wives called Tzaros? Each one is a Tzara, is a source of trouble for the other wife. There's continuous competition between the two wives for the affection of their one husband. Look at Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah was not a very good situation, even the most. So Tzara, so therefore, Ashes Nachalasi is now referring to my children that I will have with her, but rather it's going to be a problem with the children I have from my previous wife. Okay, so... Yeah, what does he say?
He said, first he asked the Kashi, he says, the whole thing was contingent upon...
That's what I get to.
So he asked the Kashi, he says, what do you intend to ask yourself? If he held that there was no din of Amoni the Lamonis, then it's going to be Mashkes me, not my Nachlosi. So he said, no, he says, okay. Maybe best in today paskin that Amoni v'lo Amonis. So that would be okay for me, but my kids, next generation,
will be a new Bezdin.
Come along, and they're going to say no. That's the wrong halacha. So that's why nachalasi. And that's why in the Gemara, when they go through this, you know, this argument with Dorig Adomi and say it's like that, the final guy walked in and
Yisra Israeli. Halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. No one's going to.
I have a Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah is not a din in Besdin. It's a Kabbalah. It's halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. So therefore,
no one's going to change b'sak halacha. So how does that answer? How does that answer? Ga'al l'cha. I know I was going to say the words, but how does that answer? Ga'al l'cha ato eskulasi. How does that? There's a very.
You hold from the p'sak.
You hold from the p'sak, but also even though Boaz holds from the p'sak, what's going to prevent the Besdin in later generations?
Boaz knew that it was.
It's halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. So that was a disagreement. Boaz, you hold this to be a halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. It's not subject for discussion. No one's going to ever change p'sak halacha. Therefore, according to you, I disagree. I have a tradition that it's not halacha l'Moshe Mesinai, but instead, I don't know. It's just a p'sak bezdin. It's a logical decision of this particular bezdin. And years later, there'll be a bezdin that's gadol b'chacham of a minyan. They'll reverse the p'sak, and then all my children will be ruled retroactively as illegitimate.
Actually, you don't even need
God. You just need the minion.
They're
trying to
the pasuk in the Torah. I think you don't
need a bezin that's God. Just another bezin. Okay, so the later bezin will change the psak halacha. That's why I'm afraid. I know it's moini moyalamis, but I don't want to go further. Okay, that's a little bit of explain, but it's still a very difficult question. Ga'al l'cho ato eskulasi. What kind of person is that? Maybe, in fact, that really reveals to us that it's not nice to say. We don't understand. That was, he had bad midos. And maybe that's exactly why Boaz did did not want this person Tov to be the Goyal. According to most Mepharshim, Boaz is doing everything possible to convince him, listen, I don't want you, it's in your, the ball's in your court, but it's not in your best interest for you to be the Goyal. And I'm going to persuade you not to do it. She's a Moavia. And what else do we say? There's the problem of Moavi Moavia problem. What are the other? What?
She's a
Katlonis. Okay, what else? She's a Giyore. She doesn't come from Gudichos. There are all these different issues that he was throwing his way, hinting to him it's not in your best interest. Why? Where do we see in the Pasuk that there was something really wrong with the Goyel? So you see, if you want to take this to the extreme, it's because he had bad midos. Hitaka says, he confirms everything that Boaz thought about him. That's right. I'm going to be Ashres Esnachalosi. I'm going to destroy my inheritance, my children. So Boaz, you do it. You do it. You destroy your children. You're good. What?
Name Tov was a euphemism.
Hey, maybe, possibly. Enochanami. You know, some learned that the Chochem and the Haggadah is also a euphemism for another form of a wise guy. A lot of terms in Chazal, so you don't really know. Is it Ayin Panim Torah? Is it mean literally? So Tov and Enochanami. He had bad midos. And the worst thing, Derech Eretz, Kadmah L'Torah, the worst possible thing for Mashiach is to come from a person who has bad midos. So this is a Ga'alukhas, it's a very tough question. Who's he talking to now? He's talking to the Gadol Hadar. You're not just talking to any person in the street. That's how you talk to the girl, that's the respect you have for the Gadol Hadar. Ga'alukhas is kulasi. Okay, so that is definitely an interesting issue. Now, let's see if we have Rashi. Rashi pasuk vav pin ashkes es nachalasi zari. What is nachalasi? And it means my children. Nachalas Hashem. What does Rashi call the pasuk? The inheritance of Hashem is children. Law says pigam bizari. I will stamp a blemish in my seed. Shenemar lo yovei amoni umoavi v'ta ba'amoni v'loy amonis. He made this mistake. He did not realize that it's not so. It's only the males and not the females. Some also want to suggest that he did know the halacha, but he was under the opinion that the only children that are valid are females. In other words, a man marries a giyoris, an amonis, and they have daughters. The daughters are okay. Amoini v'loy amoinis, mayav v'loy mayavis. So you can marry a convert, a female convert, but watch out. You have to go. Today they can do this. Dr. Fuchs, such a thing where they can decide in advance if it will be a male or female. They always talk about this in the news. They have technology today where from the time of conception they can play around with the chromosomes. Yeah, they can change it.
Change
the time of conception. They talk about this in the news every so often. You hear it in the headlines. Doctors now say you can decide.
If they're adults, they can change.
Okay, now we're not talking about that. I don't want to go there. Don't go there. Let's not go there. Let's talk about in vitro, when they do these very sophisticated types of chromosomes.
I think they can decide.
They talk about this in the news.
They talk about in vitro deciding.
They can decide which one to survive.
But let's in the chatchila, in the conception, when they actually bring it together, can they know such things? Okay, they can't. All right. They can't, wait, okay, so whatever it is, but let's say over here it's 50-50. What are the statistics? So are there statistics with more boys or girls? They actually say there are more boys.
More girls.
No, they say there are more boys, I think. Slightly more boys. That's why they go to the shuch crisis. There should be a shuch crisis. There are slightly more boys, they say. And
boys get wiped out.
What?
Boys get wiped out. Boys die.
They die?
In war.
Used to be. That's why they are a little bit more. But women die in childbirth.
No, used to. More boys die in childbirth.
I don't know. I've read... They wrote up about the shidduch crisis. They wrote up studies that there are slightly, a very small amount more boys born than girls.
So why is that true?
No, Adrian, as I was saying, so Adrabba. There shouldn't be. So the system is so corrupt that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to make it easy for us, we are Makalgal. We're so good at being Makalgal, we outdo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried to make it easy by making more boys than girls, but we are Makalgal. Okay. Whatever that is, but in any event, over here, according to some of Farshim, what Tov said to Tov, there was a dispute in Beis Din. Everyone accepted the psak halacha amoini v'loy amoines. It was accepted l'chol hades. The only point of disagreement was, what about the children? According to Tov, Tov said, that's right, the children are also good, only the females are good. But if you marry such a woman and you have boys, tough luck. The boys are out. The boys are not going to be accepted. So you have to make sure you only have females. How do you make sure you only have? The Gemara talks about the person, the techniques of males and females. You have to make sure you're only going to have females. Tov said, I'm not a bucky in these and yonim. I'm not a bucky in these and yonim. Therefore, I'm not willing to take the chance. And therefore, I don't need to get. I accept the Pesach Halacha. I'm a maimon in Chazal, but I only were taught that my female children will be okay, not my male children. I'm not a bucky in these matters. You, Boaz, you're a tzaddik. You can go on and be mispal in advance if the children that you'll have with males and the females. So you, Galacha, you know how to deal with
Boaz
this.
Do it, because no. Boaz had, what did he have, 30 boys?
30 boys, 30 girls. 30 girls.
He worked it out perfectly, yeah. So
maybe that's what he meant. And maybe in ancient times, Sadiqim, they had the girls. The Gemara says, as a fact, that there is a technique. Okay, the Gemara says there is such a thing. I can't imagine today that anyone works today, exactly, because we're not on that level, what Chazal we're talking about. But maybe that's what he's saying. I'm not on that level, you're on that level. So therefore, you go and you marry, you'll only have girls, you won't have this problem. Okay, that is one approach. What? Chazal say that. Chazal say there's such a thing. Yeah.
We have no other situations other than it's determinations by the mother of the status, Jewish or not. And it has nothing to do. There's nothing.
That's about. You mean halacha?
Females are.
Well, this halacha is a new halacha. Amoini v'loy amoines. That itself is a very bizarre halacha.
Okay, or you're not okay.
So, what's the halacha all about? Lo yavoi amoini umavi b'kahal Hashem. And yet, the Chazal are telling us only the males, not the females. So it's very logical to say that same rule should apply to the next generation. You marry an amoines, so her children. If she has female children, they're okay. If she has male children, they're not okay. There's something to it. And that's what Tov argued. Boaz said, you're dead wrong. That's not the halacha. The halacha is that once the mother is accepted, even her male children will be accepted in Klal Yisrael. This was the point of disagreement between Boaz and Tov. We're trying to limit the point just to say that they argued over the basic halacha. That's very far-fetched. What?
What was Tov's thinking based on?
He had a tradition. It wasn't like today where everything is Shulchan Aruch, codified, Mishnah Berurah down to the last dot. Those days, halacha was developing. Halacha was in a state of development. Everyone accepted this concept, amoini v'loy amoinis, but the question was, what about the next generation? Do we apply the same rule? Yes or no? This was a point of disagreement. Okay, this is one approach to lessen the difficulty in this conversation between the two. Another interesting idea, this goes to Masechta Yevamos, the rule is, Yevama, the difference between an Ashkenazim and a Sfaradim. A Yevama is truly an Eish, an Achais, Eishes Achiv. If not for the fact that the Torah says the woman is permitted to the Yavam, she would be forbidden. Chorus, it's incest. To marry a sister-in-law in the Torah's view is one of the Averos Chamuros. Chiyuv Chorus, one of the Lamed Vav Chayvei Kresos. Serious business. So how could a person marry a sister-in-law, a woman that would otherwise be forbidden with the most severe form of punishment? The Torah said it's mutter. In a situation where there are no children, it's mutter. However, some want to learn that you have to do it. You have to marry her l'shem Shemayim. If a man marries her l'shem Noiv, she's a beautiful woman, and the reason why the man marries his sister-in-law is because she is attractive. He marries her for his own pleasure. So how does halacha view that type of situation? So there is a very big difference among the Ashkenazim Paiskim and the Sfarash Paiskim. The Sfarash Paiskim hold, if the Torah says it's mutter, it's mutter. You can marry her 100% shaloi l'shem shemai. You can marry her because he likes her. Because she, whatever your ulterior motives are, that is 100% okay. The Torah says it's mutter, it's mutter. You don't have to be make cheshbonos. Among the Ashkenazi poskim, there is this distance. It's right, it's mutter, but it's an erva. Are you talking to marry an erva? So if you can do l'shem shemayim, if you know you can make that determination that you're marrying her 100% l'shem shemayim, go for it. If you can't make that determination, so you know what? The Torah gave you a way out, chalitza. So why do you want to get involved? What do you need this for? Mali l'tzara hazais. What do you need to get yourself in a situation where the Torah shows that it's not a good thing? When the Torah gave you a way out, do chalitza. So among the Ashkenazim, we generally 99.9% of the time chalitza is the option. Yibam is not an option. Among the Sfaradim, traditionally it always was an option, no matter what. Recently, what I've read up is that they don't do it either. Today they discourage it very much. The Sfaradim Shaposkim, but they'll make an exception much quicker than Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz will never let you do it. Never, but I don't think you'll ever hear about it. Sfaradim, you'll hear stories.
In rare cases.
In rare cases, Ashkenazim.
Ashkenazim, if you hear of it, it's a mum.
What do you mean it's a mum?
Just like you, if you know a guy's a mamzer, you really...
It's not a mum. How can you say it's a mum?
If someone is a...
Why?
Are you... He takes a...
Sister-in-law? Yibam? Why? Why is it a mum?
I when I was a kid, there was a person in shul who actually did it.
Yeah.
And everybody looked at him like...
A mamzer?
Not like he was a mamzer, but they looked like, you know...
In cases
like,
where the woman can do chalitza. Where the woman can do chalitza.
Okay, fine. Okay, by the Sfaradim, it's also not done that often, but it's done occasionally. So someone wanted to suggest that was the disagreement between Toiv and Boaz. Toiv said, listen, I'm not a tzaddik like you. I'm not. Rus, I like her. And when you like her, that's a chasaron when it comes to Yibam. I can't say for sure that I'm going to marry her l'shem shemayim. And if I can't marry l'shem shemayim, Ashkes es nachalosi, like Rav Meir is saying, I want him to go look at my children. He basically he was an Ashkenazi, and Boaz was a Sephardi. And Boaz said, listen, I have no problem. I can do l'shem shemayim. That's not the way the Torah looks at it. The Torah says it's mutter, it's mutter. And this was another approach to a point of disagreement between Boaz and Rus. Okay, another point, interesting idea is, this goes back to, this is a discussion, this that a Yavam is allowed to do Yibam. First of all, we have a halacha, Yibam is a mitzvah saseh, Yavam Yavoy Oleha. The Yavam should have relations with her. It is a mitzvah saseh for Yavam to marry the Yavama. Let's say that Toiv completely disagreed with the halacha of Amoyni v'loy Amoynis. Why is a Jew not allowed to marry to an Amoyavi? Aloy sase. Lo yavoy Amoyni umoavi b'kal Hashem. It's aloy sase. However, we have the principle, ase is doich aloy sase. So Boaz says, marry her. Even lefi shitoscha, according to your opinion, that it's also because amoni v'loy moyavis, it's only eloy saseh, but the yim is an aseh, saseh is doich eloy saseh. So he said that may be true for bia rishoina, for the first act of marital relations. But after the mitzvah has been fulfilled, then she turns into a full-fledged wife. And the full-fledged wife you no longer have on every sin, to continue the relationship you no longer have asay doich eloy saseh. Asay doich eloy saseh is only on the first, on the act of acquisition, but not on...
Problem. He knew he was going
to
die.
So. Well, that's a little bit Kabbalistic to say he knew he was going to die. No one knows they're going to die, but someone says so. That's what he said over here. Le'uchal ligo li pen ashkes es nachalasi. Okay, so lo ashkes sachem nachalasi means if I want to have children with her, einochanami according to the luluza yibam alada mariyaseh dechaloisaseh, but to continue a relationship with her, to have a nachalo with her, that I can't do. You, Boaz, on the other hand, I'm not going to have children with her anyway. That was the assumption. Because Boaz was too old to have children. That was the assumption. So it was just purely a matter of Yibam. It was purely a matter of a one-time acquisition. And then there would be no problem. I say what?
Someone, if it's known that the Goel is infertile and can have kids. Does Yibam still apply?
It depends. Okay, I don't know the answer. It depends on the situation. Generally does apply unless he's an Elaine, Elanus, Elaine. In this case, there's only due to age. The assumption was he would not have children was because of his age. That would not hold him back from the mitzvah of Yibam. It would not be a problem to continue a relationship with her. So therefore, Ga'al Lecha, you take her as a wife through a one-time acquisition, you'll be mekayim the mitzvah, and then there's not going to be a problem in the future. Then you can divorce her, perhaps, or even if maybe you can live with her, but you're not going to live together as husband and wife. It's just going to be like a political marriage, so to speak. I don't know all the pratim, but this is part of the discussion. Not everything in this discussion is lefi halacha. Does not work out lefi halacha, but we have to understand the halacha came a lot later. The halachic conclusions of the way it's established came generations later. This was all part of the halachic discussion between Boaz. We're trying to limit the disagreement between Boaz and the Goel. You can marry her. Boaz is trying to convince her to marry her. And now I think we have more of an appreciation of what the Targum says. The Targum says, don't just take her as a Yavama. Take her as a wife. Look at the Targum. Back to the Targum. Targum says, back in the Pasuk Hey, the Targum in Pasuk Hey seems to make this point. Targum says, "At lemifrak uboy liyabama, you are required to take her as a yavama liyabama yasa lemispa leintu." Isn't a Yavama a wife? When a man takes a woman as a Yavama, automatically she becomes his wife. Why does the Targum have to add, in addition to taking her as a Yavama, also lemispol into? The Targum is coming to allude to the two-stage process of Yibam. The act of Yibam is only the first marital act. That is the mitzvah Yibam concludes at that point in time. So if you want to apply the rule of Aseh, that's where it starts and ends. Then when one continues to live with her as a wife forever, that will be a violation of Lo Yavai Amoni Yumav Bekal Hashem. Boaz says it's not a problem. Once the Torah allows you to marry her, Yibam is Doicha Lo Yavai Amoni Yumav Bekal Hashem, that allows you to remain married to her for the rest of your lives. That's not a problem. Tov said, I disagree with you. That's not the halacha. I hold that Aseh Doichalois Aseh only works for the first act, which is the acquisition, and mikan ula haba, then there is no asay being doichaloy sasay. It's a long neshamachloikis between the goyel and the boyaz and the goyel of how far this goes.
What's the question with the sister-in-law? There's no sister-in-law.
Well, okay, you're right. You're asking a very good point, because anyway over here, this whole discussion is bizarre because there is no real yibam. There's only a symbolic yibam. There's not a halachic yibam. However, even though it's only a symbolic Yibam, we're operating, I don't have an answer, we're operating with the rules of Yibam. We're still operating with the rules of Yibam. The Targum is the one who keeps on doing this. He keeps on saying Yibam, 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 Yibam. And, but you open up Shulchan Aruch, what are you talking about? There is no Yibam here. The whole thing, Aseh Decholes Aseh, she's not a Yibama. What kind of Aseh Decholes Aseh? What's going on over here? What Shulchan Aruch are you reading from? I don't know, but I'm repeating what the Mepharshim
have. Should we consider it at least
No, she's the Giyoreh. She's a nothing. She, the Rus wasn't even Jewish. So should the whole picture of Yim. Yim doesn't even come into play altogether. Even redeeming the property, how does that come into play? The property, who owns the property? Does a Jew own the property? Does a non-Jew own the property? Rus, when did she convert? When did she inherit the property? Did she inherit the property according to Jewish law? There's no such thing. The man marries a non-Jewish woman and he dies. So the wife inherits the property? No such thing. It's not even halacha. She's not even considered to be married to her. To a non-Jewish woman.
She doesn't inherit.
Even if she was, well, let's say there are no children, they know that she does inherit. If there's no one else.
When it goes to the father.
You're right, the other rules. Okay, so I don't know. So there are a lot of big questions. Let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk, Zayin. The Zeus Lefanim, he's made a decision, a conscious decision, that he's not going to do the Gula, but instead who is going to be the Goyel? The one that's going to be the Goyel is Boaz. So here we have a very interesting idea that Boaz, before he can actually marry her, and before he actually can redeem the field, he has to buy the right of Gula from the closest relative. Okay, that's a very interesting thing because that's not what you would expect. You would expect, you read the Pesukim in the Torah, the laws of Gula, the closest relative has first rights. If the closest relative decides not to do it, then the next, all he asks is, I don't want to do it. I'm not interested. I don't have the money. I can't afford to redeem the property. Automatically, the next closest relative steps up. The second closest relative does not need to buy the rights from the closest relative. That does not appear to be the halacha. And if you have, the Torah says, a person is poor, he's put out his field for sale. The Torah says the closest relative should step forward and buy the property. Let's say the closest relative is a brother. And the brother says, sorry, I don't have a penny to my name. I don't have any money, I can't do this. So what happens? So who's the next closest relative? Let's say an uncle. So now the uncle steps forward. Does the uncle have to buy the rights to redeem the property from the brother? No, of course not. You have a choice. Would you like to do it? All you have to do is make a declaration in court. I decide not to redeem the property. Automatically, the next one steps up. Yet here, we find that Boaz is going lefnim yeshuras hadin. He's going lefnim yeshuras hadin. And he's not just going to go and redeem the property and marry Rus. He's going to formally buy the rights from... to buy the rights from Tov to redeem the field and to marry Rus. This is what he chooses to do. And how
why
does
he have to do it in front of a best?
He didn't. He could have just done this in front of witnesses. He could have just done it. However, he wanted to go the extra step with Nimashur Sadin that there should be no Dumfarshim is he should, but since Melech HaMashiach is going to come from this union, he does not want Toiv at a later point in time to say that it was stolen from me. It was stolen from me. Had I known, I wouldn't have done this, and I never was masking. This should be done in public with an acquisition. It should be clear as day that everything that's taking place is fair and square. 100% legitimate. Everything here he's doing is lefnim mishura sadin. And how does he choose to make this transaction? He uses kinyan chalipin or kinyan sudar. Kinyan chalipin really is a kinyan d'oraisa. Kinyan sudar is a kinyan d'rabbanon. And in this case, he's going to use this kinyan, which we're going to see in detail. That's going to be really, it's going to serve both as a d'oraisa kinyan of chalipin in exchange, and it's also going to also work as a kinyan that's invented by the merchants called kinyan sudar. Here, now here the pasuk describes how it's done. The zos the following lefanim and yishol is the way things were done in the old days from time formerly in the old days. Now, the first one I want to point out is that Boaz at this point over here reinstituted the inyan of chalipin. It was forgotten. It was put in disuse. They used what's called kitzitza. It's a very bizarre kinyan. Kitzitza is they take a barrel of barley, and barley, you say, why barley? The whole Sefer Rus is all about barley. And here we have the rejection of barley. We're not going to use the kinyan kitzitza. Take a barrel of barley, and they took a sensation to measure barley. Is that what it says?
No. Later, in the Medrash, it says jars with parched grain roasted on a fire and nuts, and then they would break the
Okay, chavios, meleos, egoizim, ukloios. Okay, you're right. Nuts and parched kernels of grain. This is how things were done in ancient times. You want to buy a field from your friend. What do? You go. The buyer and the seller stand together, and the way they form, they conclude the transactions. They take a barrel of nuts, and they bring children. Okay, children have to participate in the kinyan, and they take a hammer. They smash the barrel. It doesn't say who smashes the barrel. Is it the buyer? Is it the seller? Is it the children? Is it the Bezdin? Someone smashed the barrel. And all of the nuts disperse all over the place. And all the children go and they collect the nuts. And when that happens, that is the way the transaction has concluded. The property has been transferred from Reuven to Shimon. Shimon now has a financial obligation to pay Reuven for the cost of the field. But the transfer has occurred. This is called Kinyan Kitsitsa. Kitsitsa means to smash. To smash the barrel, it was symbolic. To cut off, it was symbolic. Reuven has been cut off. Has been cut off from his possessions. We look at the barrel as the ownership, the property, Reuven. The barrel represents Reuven. Reuven is a kli sharis. Reuven has in his possession nuts. The nuts are symbolic of his assets. And we break the barrel, Reuven has been shattered. Reuven no longer is the Baal HaBayit. He no longer is in possession. His assets have dispersed, and other people are now collecting the assets. The children that pick up the pieces, pick up the nuts, represent Shimon. He has now become the one who has acquired. This is the way things were done in ancient times. Now, it seems over here, this is the depth of the Medrash. Why did the Boaz say, you know what, we're no longer going to use this kitsitsa. I don't like this type of acquisition. It's symbolic. I don't like it. I don't want to do that. I want to go back and do it different. I want to do an exchange. I'm going to take off my shoe and I'm going to give it to you, or you're going to take off your shoe and you're going to give it to me, and we exchange one or the other. When we exchange shoes, that's going to affect the transfer of property. Question: what was wrong with the old-fashioned transaction? So the Medrash here opens up the whole this in wide by telling us this transaction was not only used as a means of transferring property. It's a very interesting, fascinating Medrash. It was also used, Don, when a person married a shiksa. No. Okay? Non-Jewish girl. Like today, Rachmana Litzlan, years ago, if a man married a non-Jewish girl, the parents would sit shiva. Okay, this was well known.
They do it today too?
Yeah. Never heard of it, yeah?
Yeah, they do it.
They talk Korean. I know somebody taught Korean.
They talk Korean. They did it. They sat shiva for 7 days. Can you imagine? They did Korean. They sat shiva for 7 days. You don't hear about it so often today, Baruch Hashem. I mean, even if it happens, people are not going to hear about it. But years ago, my parents told me, you heard such things like this. People who went, they married non-Jewish girls, parents, actually they sat shiva. That's the halacha. So in ancient times of Boaz, when a man married a non, they didn't have all these halachas of kriya. This is before halacha was formalized, was formed, codified to all the rules. When a man married a non-Jewish girl, you know what they did? They went out into the street, they took the same barrel of nuts, and someone took a hammer, they smashed the barrel, and all the nuts were dispersed, and the children came to pick up the nuts. What was it symbolic of? Let's read the words of the Medrash. Rabbi Yosef bar Baravin, af mi shohaya noisa isha shein hagenes lo. A man marries a woman that's not proper, a non-Jewish girl. Hayu oisin loikein v'amu niksa ze mi mishpachto. The person, it's the barrel represents the father, the father of the man, or the person, whoever. And then by marrying this non-Jewish girl, basically he cut himself off. He destroyed himself, and everything that he has possesses, all of his children, his zera, has been dispersed. Now here get the name. It was the second part when the person did tshuva. and he got rid of her. He divorced this woman that was unfit. They did the same thing. They broke the barrel. They broke the barrel, and the children collected the nuts. And by collecting the nuts, they would say the opposite. Oh, now we're collecting the nuts as a way of saying that this person has now come back to his senses. He's done tshuva. And therefore, what the Medrash seems to be saying is, Boaz said, "I don't want. We have to make a transaction. I am now going to purchase the rights of Gula from my relative, my uncle Toif. How are we going to make this transaction? Well, the typical way we make the transaction is we bring a barrel and we smash the barrel and the nuts are dispersed and the children collect. That's the way it was done in ancient times when you make a transaction. But if I do this in public, it's going to defeat the purpose. Because all of the visitors, all of the onlookers, what are they going to say? The reason why we're smashing the barrel is because Boaz is now about to marry a shiksa, a non-Jewish girl. Oh, so this kinyan, which was done ma'isim b'chol yom, it was all the time. But the kinyan was never. The kinyan was also done when someone married that someone that was not fit. Here, I'm making this kinyan to buy the rights, and the next thing I'm going to do, 3 minutes later, I'm going to go marry her. So, what are people going to walk away saying? They're going to say that Boaz married a non-Jewish girl, and now all of the children, whatever's going to come, Mashiach cannot possibly come. So there's no. And then they'll record this for years, right? They'll come with the camera crew, and then 100 years later, they'll go and they'll say, "Oh, Melech HaMashiach is born." Really, Melech HaMashiach is born, but when he married her, everyone, the whole Klal Yisrael, they did this minhag, which means that he married a woman that's not fit to come into Klal Yisrael. So David Boaz said, "That's it. We're not going to do this." So you have any other tricks up your sleeve? Any other kinyanim? Well, we're not going to do kesef shtar and chazaka, because you don't do kesef shtar and chazaka when you want to transfer rights. What are we trying to transfer? We're not transferring property. I didn't buy the property. The property he was going to buy with Kesef Shtar Chazaka.
Right.
I'm buying the rights to redeem. So I'm not buying real estate. I'm not buying metalim yemakana with Mashiacha. All the rules of Metzia. Metalim yemakana with Mashiacha. You want to acquire karka, this Kesef Shtar Chazaka. It's something that's intangible. Something that's intangible. The way you acquire is with Kinyan Sudar. With Chalip and Kinyan Suda, where you exchange something. But the only thing that existed at that time that was in practice was Kitsitsa, to break the barrel. But breaking the barrel is a bad omen. It's going to defeat my purpose, because it's also used to when you're marrying a woman who's not right. So you know what? We got to go back to tradition. Let's go back to the ancient books. And there it says there was Kinyan Sudar. So let's now reinstate the Kinyan Sudar. Because Kinyan Sudar was never associated with anything bad. It was never associated with marrying a woman that's not proper. So that's why the Zos Lifonim B'Yishol Boaz had no choice but to bring back an old minhag that was out of practice for years because of the unique situation that he found himself in.
They didn't spit.
What do you mean spit? What?
No,
right, yeah.
This fits something. It's something I saw that why were the children involved? So that in future generations
they should see it.
Remember having taken the part in this ceremony.
Very good, excellent, fantastic. You know why?
Therefore, the land had.
Fantastic.
Within the family.
You're touching upon something very fascinating, because you're saying they had specifically children, because children would see and they'll remember for all generations. If you take someone who's 95 years old, listen, how much longer is he going to be around? So how he's not. So isn't it because later, you go to a wedding, we had this discussion, who are you mechabed as the aiden at a wedding? Who are you mechabed? So it depends. So some in some communities the custom is the chassan is mechabed his friends. You have young people that are very young, are the witnesses under the chuppah. You give the brachas to all the zakenim, all the rosh yeshiva, the older rosh yeshiva, the zakenim, the grandparents, and you give the edim as the friends. You know, there's something to it, because the friends, al pi derech hateva, they'll be around for a long time.
Right.
And they'll always be able to testify, that's right, I was a witness at this person's wedding. And that's exactly what you want. You want witnesses that will be around forever to testify, because if you have someone who's 100 years old that's serving as your witness at the wedding, so then it'll be a question, are these people really married? Are they really married? Are they not married? They are married. They claim. You don't know what goes on. You want to bring the witnesses. So there's definitely something to bring young. On the other hand, there's a double-edged sword. You want to bring young witnesses to be a kosher witness. You have to be, you know, you have to be an upright person. You don't know all the skeletons about the young people. The people already
people have the skeletons.
Hopefully, the older people, if they haven't, the skeletons have not come out by now. Hopefully. Hopefully. They got away with it this long. Hopefully, they'll get away with it forever. But the young people, you don't know what's coming. You don't know what's going to be. So on the other hand, Mahar B'Tshuva, there's a trend. I mean, definitely among B'nai Torah, they B'dafka do not give young people. They're very makbet to give. Eidei Yichud?
Why?
Because they ran away.
Seems to be more than they give the
friends, the Eidei Yichud.
Okay.
They're going anyway, they're dancing with the Chasam Kalam.
So it's very, but now the reason why I also mentioned that is because later we learn something to the fascinating Medrash, is that when in the few psukim later, when Boaz actually sets aside witnesses, it says explicitly he set aside Zikanim as the witnesses. And the Medrash says, from here you see you should use Zikanim, elders, as witnesses. Okay, we'll get to it later on. Vayomer Boaz Lazikanim, Pasik Tess. Vayomer Boaz Lazikanim, Becholom, Eidim Atem. Why did he want the Zikanim? Adarab. As Ramachol said, when they did the ceremony, a person marries someone who's not supposed to marry, they use children, they break the barrel, the nuts disperse, the children collected. We want the children because they should still be around to remember that this person married an Ishainu again, Islow, and the children are illegitimate. Are legitimate, they shouldn't forget, you have to have children. Yet Boaz, later when he actually went and he designated not children, he designated Zikanim, and the Medrash says, because Zikanim are we haven't come to the Medrash later on, but I don't know, I have all the answers, but you see Milus and Chasronos in each approach to the different types of witnesses.
Can we use this as a lie that he's already converted, he's already Kara?
Well, she definitely was. At this point in time, there's no question she already was. But people were always questioning for generations. Look at David. David, people questioned David. Shaul asked, who is this person? Does he come from Peretz or Zerach? Which line of lineage? If he comes from Peretz, that means he's going to be the Melech. If he comes from Zerach, he's a Meuchas, but he's not a threat to me. Doeg says, instead of asking, does he come from Peretz or Zerach, why don't you ask, is he Jewish? Is he even Jewish altogether? His mother was Rusam Ovia. What the only generation, this is already four or five generations. Well, what kind of question is this? Obviously, this answer was not resolved. This answer was a debate. People were not happy to accept the Psak Halacha on Moini V'Loi Mayavis. And here, that's exactly what he's telling Toiv. Watch out, there's going to be trouble all along. Okay, but let's go over to you the Pasuk V'Zois Lefanim Bi Yisrael. This was the old Minhag Yisrael, which has now been reinstated. Al HaGeula V'Al HaTemura. It was used for Geula purposes. It was used similarly. This means that when a person wanted to buy the rights to Gula, that's a very simple interpretation.
Do you have any Makar in the Torah for this Kenyan?
Kenyan Chalip, and I think there is. Kono Miyad Amiso. I think Chazalon Kono Miyad Miyad Amisecha. I think. That's Mashicha. That's Kesef Mashicha. Okay, I don't know the answer. I think I saw over here someone that does say that there is a remez in the Torah. I saw it very quickly. There is a remez. Okay, we'll come to it maybe at some point. V'zos l'fanim Yisrael ha-geula. So simli ha-geula means that when you want to purchase the right, you want to purchase rights, something that's intangible, the al hatmur, in exchange, barter. Anytime you exchange one thing from the other, l'kayim kol davar, or to establish any matter. Okay, we'll see some of them first in a moment, what all these things are. So the rule was shalaf ish nalo v'nasan lire. One member, one person, one party. There is the buyer and the seller, the giver and the taker. The pasuk is vague, deliberately vague, because technically there's machlokes in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel. The Caleb Shal Koine, Caleb Shal Makne. So b'diavad it works both ways. Some, there are a lot of different halachas. Which one is ideal? But basically, if one of them gives an object, and when you give the object to the other person takes it, that affects the transaction. The transaction is complete. The object has been transferred from the rishus, the domain of one person, to the other person. And now, if there's money, if money is owed, the money turns into a loan. You owe me money, but it's my property. The nos shalaf ish mal nalo simply means a shoe. The nosan lireyehu, you give it to your friend. The zos hatuda bi Yisrael. Tuda is Torah. Tuda is a synonym for Torah. This is Torah law. This is Torah law. It is accepted according to the law of the Torah to make an exchange through the kinyan called shalaf ish na'alo. Now, by the way, what is na'alo? So, big machlokes rishonim. Simply, na'alo means a shoe. By the laws of Yavama, she takes off the shoe of the yavam. However, in this context, some suggest that it means a glove. A na'al can either mean what goes on the foot, or it means what goes on the hand. I think the Chizkuni says this. What goes on the hand. That's why by the parasha of Yibam, it doesn't say v'sholaf na'alo, period. It says v'sholaf na'alo me'al raglo. She takes off the na'al from his foot. Because if the pasuk would not say me'al raglo, it would leave the word na'al to your imagination, you would think that she takes off his gloves. She takes off a glove, because a na'al is something which covers either the hand or the foot. It's very bizarre. Can you imagine? You go to a wedding, and you see by a wedding, when the Masad Dignitian says to the chassan, okay, take off your shoe. Take off your shoe and give it to me so we should make a kinyan on the ksuba. You should mechayv yourself to all of the things that it says in the ksuba. Take off your shoe. You never saw that, right? And you certainly never saw the Masad Dignitian take off his shoes and say, here's my shoe. Here's my smelly shoe. I've been on my shoes the whole day. Here, take it off and hold it for the camera. You've never seen that. But if that isn't the kinyan, it makes a lot more sense if the Masada Kedushin would take off his gloves. Or the chas, you ever see these old pictures? These old pictures? Maybe some of you had wear gloves by your wedding. Anyone here wear gloves by their wedding? White gloves?
No.
No, but I still have some pictures. What? The Kala gloves? The Chassanim also wore gloves. He also wore gloves.
Right. The waiters wore
French service.
Gloves. Listen, they wore gloves.
Okay, but Mishalaf ish na'aloi, it makes
times by Moshe, by the snare,
yeah,
and by Yoshua.
Shal na'alcha me'al raglecha.
Shal na'alcha, yeah.
It always says the foot.
Na'alcha's by Yoshua.
Sure.
Na'alcha,
the foot.
By Moshe.
So it says, always it says na'al in the Torah, it says, why you have to end it? Na'al means a shoe. No, it doesn't mean a shoe. It means something which covers either your toes or your fingers, whatever, the palm of your hand. And therefore here, it makes a lot more sense. You're doing a business transaction in court. It doesn't seem to go well. You can take off your shoes in Besdin. It means shalaf ish na'alo v'nosan l'riyehu v'zos ha'atudu. This is Torah law. By transferring one to the other, this is a form of acquisition. Now, what is the lumness? Gives the lumness of this transaction. Now, if it's
the way the Arabs.
It's the ultimate sign insult. The ultimate insult is to throw insults, to throw shoes.
Maybe they're trying to say that, you know, we don't hold from these types of kinyan.
No. I don't know. Okay, now what's the lumness? If the buyer is the one who gives his shoe or glove, then it's really an exchange. I'm giving you a token. I'm giving you a gift. I have a nice pair of gloves. Costs $50. Costs $5. Get a nice, comfortable, what's called UGG. UGG gloves, right? They're nice, comfortable sheepskin gloves. So how much they cost? What? They sell gloves also. They sell gloves also. They're very comfortable. So how much? So I'm giving you a token gift. I'm giving you a gift. I'm giving you a gift, an exchange for me giving you a gift. You're going to give me in exchange also a gift. You're going to give me property. You have a house. You have a... You want to... let's say the Masader Kedushin. The Masader Kedushin gives the Chassan a handkerchief. handkerchief. So I'm giving you this in exchange for me giving you a gift. I'm giving you a pen, a beautiful pen. I'm giving you a gift in exchange. I want you to accept upon yourself the responsibility of everything that it says in this document. It's an exchange. If you learn that it's Kalev Shel Koine, then the Lomdis is Chalipin, an exchange. If you learn it's Kalev Shel Makne, what's the Lomdis? It means the pleasure that you have accepted. It's the same idea. The Makne, I'm giving you, let's say, a diamond ring. I want to sell you a diamond ring. The money, you'll owe me the money. That's another discussion. The money will be a loan. You'll owe me the money. You gave me down payment, whatever it is. But let's now effect the transfer. The way I'm going to, the diamond is on the table. I'm going to give you a handkerchief. When you accept a handkerchief, you also own the diamond ring. How does that work? The pleasure that I have, that someone has accepted a gift, in exchange for that pleasure, I give you the diamond ring. We don't. That's the lumbus. What's important to the lumbus?
It's like
yeah, exactly. So it's always working. Kenyan Sutra always works with the concept of exchange. The question is it a real? Is it a physical exchange or is it an exchange for pleasure? I want to give you a gift. I don't accept gifts. I don't want your gift. What are you giving me a gift? If I accept a gift from you, that means I owe you. Isn't that the way the world works? It's a bribe. When you give someone a gift, you automatically feel beholden to that person. We say that in davening. Hashem is by HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing kindness for us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns us. He creates us. We're beholden to Him. It's a fact. When someone does you a kindness, I owe you. So I don't want to accept your gifts. I don't want it. You're going to accept the gift. I have tremendous hana. In exchange for giving me the pleasure that you have accepted my gift, I give you a diamond ring. I give you. You've given me something by taking my gift. I give you back. It's like a cycle. I give you something else. That's the lumness of Kalev Shel Makne. B'derech klal, most of halacha, it's Kalev Shel Makne. It's usually Kalev Shel Makne. That's the way it usually works. Like by Chassan, by Chassan, the Chassan is Shabbat himself to fulfill all of the rules of the Ksuba and the Tnoyim. So basically, the Mesader Kedushin gives him a handkerchief as a gift, and the Kinyan is when the Chassan gives the handkerchief back. When he gives the handkerchief back to the Mesader Kedushin, so then he is being mechayiv himself to fulfill all the obligations in the ksuba or in the tenayim. Okay, well, we'll stop over here.
Can I make one? Does anybody else know where the phrase al ha'geula v'al ha'tshuva?
Sat Merevi Sefer.
His most famous or notorious sefer, depending on how you look at it, against Zionism is.
The title of the story of the Shul.
You see, it's a play on words, because he says, you know, that Jews have an exchange